Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Kathleen Merrigan, Deputy Secretary at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So, Kathleen, the economic downturn has impacted many sectors and areas of the nation, including rural America. As a leading advocate of that area, what is USDA doing to transform rural America and enhance its prosperity? And more particularly, what are the pillars of success around that area?
Rural America has been in an economic freefall long before the rest of the economy. And when we came into this administration, Secretary Vilsack, a former two-term governor of Iowa, was very cognizant of the problems in rural America, the infrastructure needs, the lower incomes, the difficulty to access health care. And what we've seen over a period of time is very serious out-migration from rural America. At this point, less than 16% of Americans live in rural America. People on the farms, on the ranches, times have been tough. They work really hard. They get their kids to college. And then, as much as it pains them, they advise them not to come back to the farm. So we have a very serious problem here in aging in our farm base. The average age of farmers in this country is 57 years of age, but we have 30% of our farmers age 65 and older. I meet quite often farmers who are in their 80s still farming because they're not quite sure who to pass the farm on to. We're really at a tipping point. I guess that's the term everyone loves to use. But we are at a point where we really have to have a major transition on our rural landscape if we are going to continue to not only feed ourselves, but feed the world in many cases. We came into this administration saying, well, you can't do everything. We have to have some strategies. One strategy is broadband access. Most farms, there's a spouse who's working off the farm, and income is really important to keep that enterprise going. If people had more broadband access in rural America, that would help with telemedicine, it would help with rural schools, and it certainly would help with entrepreneurialism. Small businesses of all kinds could be created. And so we've really been focused on extending broadband, and of course the Recovery Act, the stimulus dollars, went a long way helping us do that. We're very focused on local and regional food systems as a way of creating job opportunities in rural America. There is a fervor in this country around local and regional foods. Food trend that my friends in the retail food industry say they haven't seen anything like it in their lifetime. Well, that creates an opportunity. If we can help build some of that infrastructure that the smaller scale farmers could use to deliver local foods, that's a strategy that we're really high on. There's a lot of emphasis in this administration on green jobs, renewable energy specifically, a lot of investments, and we've heard the president talk about renewable energy. We have been talking about renewables well before people saw this most recent gas hike in the stations around the country. I know Americans are feeling that as they go off on their summer vacations, but this is a president, this is an administration who's been very, very focused on that. There's an energy cabinet, a subset of the cabinet that meets regularly to talk about issues around that. And we're also very excited about recreation opportunities in our national forests and parklands, all the different recreational activities around hunting and fishing and all of that. We think we can do better in terms of marshaling our natural resources to create those economic opportunities. And finally, we're really high on ecosystem markets. Now, this is sort of newfangled. They're not all up and running, but people who have observed what we've done with acid rain, wetlands, we've had basically a sort of a market system there where you can trade. We need to come up with ecosystem markets where farmers and ranchers and others get a benefit from using their resources in a way that helps overall ecosystem development. So those are sort of our focal areas in a rural development portfolio. But again, you know, coming myself from a small town, if you don't have access to healthcare, you don't have a library in town, you don't have off-farm income because there's no little main street to shop in, it doesn't matter how wonderful the farm economy is, people just don't want to live there. So when we talk about the farm safety net at USDA, we have to be talking about more than disaster assistance programs because we've got a really bad drought in Texas, as we do now, or we have horrendous flooding in North Dakota as we do now. It's more than just that farm product. At the end of the day, it's about the vitality in those rural communities and whether people are going to run or raise a family there.
Well, you did mention the agricultural safety net for farmers, ranchers, and landowners. Could we actually identify some of those programs and how do they weave together to form what is, in a sense, a safety net? And how is the current economic fiscal realities we're dealing with impact these programs?
Well, time will tell on what the impact will be, because certainly farm programs have been in all the articles that we've read about in negotiations leading up to the act just passed by Congress, signed by the president, with the debt ceiling. And the super committee, I'm sure, will be discussing farm programs as well as other things in the federal government as they figure out how to muscle through current times. We have disaster assistance programs, a few different ones, so that if you have a situation where your livestock or your trees or your crops have been destroyed by severe weather, for example, there is a way that we can help out. There are also crop insurance programs. The taxpayers do subsidize crop insurance, so farmers purchase crop insurance, but it is somewhat subsidized. But it's very important to get them into the programs because those programs work and they pay out well. And so we have those kind of programs. One of the things that people don't realize, and I would like to emphasize here, is that American agriculture is one of the few areas over the last five decades where we have seen a consistent trade surplus. So one of the things that we are really focused on, too, is building those export market opportunities. We're anticipating this year our exports of ag products to be somewhere between $130 to $140 billion, and the trade surplus is something like $44 billion. So all of these farm safety programs and subsidy of crop insurance is really a down payment on what is overall a very important contribution to our national economy.
Kathleen, you were a big proponent of the Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food initiative. Could you explain to us a little bit about this initiative? How does it facilitate the development of local and regional food systems and better connect consumers with local farms?
Well, the initiative is a hard thing for people to understand because it has no budget. It has no full-time staff. You can't come to USDA and visit the Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food office. So in some ways, that is sort of shattering people's typical concepts of is this a program? I say, no, it's not a program. It's a management initiative. I came into the department with the secretary asking me to move forward on local foods, and I found out that one of our programs that Congress specifically directed to invest in local foods hadn't done so, in part because they were confused about what constituted local foods. In part, they hadn't been pressed to do it. And so I realized that rather than creating something new, what I really needed to do was look across all of USDA programs and appropriated accounts and ask the question, are we doing the best we can do within current mandates to facilitate local and regional agriculture? And what I found out was the answer was clearly no. And so the initiative is really about educating across the department about what we're talking about when we're saying facilitate local and regional agriculture, figuring out how to get the different programs in a more synergistic working way. So for example, I've got a team, a subcommittee called Local Meat. How's that for? Isn't that everyone wants to be in the Local Meat Committee? But anyhow, they're looking at issues around slaughter capacity. If you're a smaller farm and you want to add livestock into your system because that's important from a nutrient cycling viewpoint, maybe you don't have a place to bring your animals to slaughter because you're just not big enough, you're too far away. We've clarified some rules on investments and put some money on the table for mobile slaughter units, trailers basically that can come to the farm, that are food safety inspected, that are safe and people can slaughter the animals. Well, so the Food Safety Inspection Service, they're in charge of the rules for that. Rural Development has the funding to help fund those facilities. The Agricultural Marketing Service has a program on food hubs, and they can help connect that all so where people can vend their food. So what I found was when I came to the department, everyone was working, they're working hard, but in their own little shops, and there was nobody connecting the dots. And so I have a task force that meets every 2 weeks. And part of it is educating one another about what we do. We also bring some outsiders in to talk about what's going on in the countryside. We have a SharePoint, you know, on the computer where people share their experiences. It's been really phenomenal, and people have been very, very excited about it across the countryside.
Well, actually, turning to something you were instrumental in authoring, I believe, it was the Organic Foods Production Act of 1990, which required USDA to set standards that assured organically produced agricultural products. Would you tell us more about your efforts to strengthen the national organic program? And what does it mean to bring it into an era of enforcement and equivalency?
So, yes, when I first came in as deputy, I said that it was going to be the era of enforcement in the National Organic Program. Yes, I helped write the law in 1990. It was part of the Farm Bill. And then in the Clinton administration, I oversaw the agency where the rulemaking was completed. So I've had a very hands-on, detailed engagement with the National Organic Program. But in the last few years, I felt that people should know the rules by now. You never want to catch people unaware. It takes a while for people to understand rules, particularly complex rules, such as they are in the National Organic Program. But the days of saying, I just didn't know, are over. And the program hadn't gone after people in the way that I thought they should have. And so we really have put an emphasis on enforcement. We have actually had several legal cases in the course of this administration. And I think that there is a new faith in the National Organic Program. Now, part of it was the program was running on nickels and dimes. It's now not even quite a $10 million program. It's still very small in the scheme of what USDA does, but that's a very significant increase in the first couple of years of the Obama administration that's made a difference for the ability of the program staff to enforce the rules. We also are interested in equivalency. You mentioned that we signed our first equivalency agreement with the country of Canada. And what does that mean? It means that our products can trade across that border without a problem because we've essentially recognized Canada's standards and they recognize our standards as essentially equivalent. They may not be exactly the same, but they are sufficiently the same that we can let trade free flow. And we are hoping and working very hard to enact similar agreement with other parts of the world, particularly right now with the EU.
I'd like to turn to something you mentioned earlier, which is the importance of agricultural exports. Over the past 2 years, the exports have been very strong for a host of reasons. Would you outline your efforts at USDA to increase export opportunities for U.S. agriculture? And how does this fit into the National Export Initiative?
Well, we are very involved in the National Export Initiative. We are looking for ways to open up markets. We're very involved in conversations with countries over non-tariff trade barriers, challenging opposition that comes from other than scientific motivations. We have tactics and strategies vis-a-vis certain countries, but we do have target countries that we're working to expand trade in. I have 98 USDA offices in 76 countries. So most embassies around the world, they have an ag attaché there. Their purpose is to figure out market opportunities for U.S. agriculture. We have trade missions where we go off and we bring American companies to different countries and try to help them meet the kind of people they need and understand the systems in those countries so that they can export their product. And we've put ourselves on a pretty ambitious road. We'd like to get to $150 billion export market next year in 2012. And again, I think we're headed somewhere in the range of $130 billion this year. So if we can pull that off, my goodness, we have more than earned our keep.
I'd like to switch a little bit to a different topic, and it's a fairly new topic, as I understand it. It's agroforestry. First, could you tell us a little bit about what that is, and more particularly, what about the strategic framework and the goals that you folks at USDA have created around this area?
Agroforestry, it's my favorite topic. I'm so happy that you would ask about that. And really, my perspective on agroforestry comes, again, from being at Tufts and having students write papers on agricultural systems in other countries. What I got back was a lot of stuff about agroforestry, and it was something, frankly, I was very unfamiliar with because it's not very well practiced here in this country. Agroforestry is the intentional blending of agriculture and forestry to create integrated and sustainable land use systems, which in turn present opportunities that can benefit landowners and communities. Basically, it's another a diversification technique a farmer can use on his operation to increase his bottom line. We do practice agroforestry in this country quite typically around riparian forests, buffers, windbreaks on farms, but opportunities in things like forest farming and alley cropping have been very underutilized. So what we're trying to do is lift up opportunities in agroforestry by using the bully pulpit, for one, because I think if I go to a lot of ag audiences in this country and I start talking about agroforestry, they'll be pulling out the dictionary. It's just something that we haven't tapped in this country, and I think it's a great opportunity.
What is USDA doing to cut costs and improve operational performance? We will ask Kathleen Merrigan, Deputy Secretary at USDA, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.